morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program that is devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society, certainly the most important segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions. This program is devoted to those who recognize that there is no reason for us to stress over who to elect, who to appoint, who to follow, because no one is worthy. Our mission is to look behind the headlines, to know who is perpetrating the crimes, why they're doing so, where they're going to lead us. And as a result, during our second hour, typically today it'll be during our first, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, because it provides the only reliable answer, the only opportunity to escape these human endeavors. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. Several times today, we'll make an announcement. I have mentioned briefly on this program before that it was likely that we were going to change time slots and that the program would be increased in length to 3 hours. That is going to occur, and it's going to begin with our next show on Monday. So the program will begin at 12 o'clock, high noon Eastern time, 3 hours before that, 9 o'clock if you're in the Western time zone, but 12 o'clock noon Eastern time and run until 3 o'clock. It is a time slot that I requested, but that most choose to avoid. It is the time slot that is dominated on radio by Rush Limbaugh. And here on GCN, their lead host also occupies this same time slot. But certainly, all of you who listen to this program live and those who listen to the archives know that starting next Monday, we will begin in our new time slot and that the program will have an extra hour added to it. I'd like to begin this morning where we left off at the end of our program yesterday, in anticipation in the second hour of having IQ Al-Rasuli, who is our expert on all things Islam. So if we turn to the Torah, the conversation that we were in the midst of is that Yahweh and Abraham had just finished what was, from at least my perspective, the most important conversation to ever occur between man and God. And I'm going to repeat it just briefly so that we've set the stage for what's going to happen next. We find that Abraham had been told by God, had been asked by God to leave his country, Babylon. And he did so. And he said, I want you to leave everything associated with Babylon behind, which would be religion, politics, militarism, economic schemes. I want you to leave all that behind. And I want you to walk to me to a place that I have promised. And then in these conversations, he began to promise Abraham a variety of things, all which were associated with an inheritance. He told him that his goal was to adopt Abraham, you know, as an inheritance. It's your children that inherit what you have to offer. And that he was going to perfect Abraham, and that he was offering to make Abraham immortal. He said that it was part of this covenant that he would use to enrich Abraham and empower him. And so Abraham, listening to God offer these things, became perplexed. And as the nature of a relationship, if the parties in the relationship can treat each other and approach each other as individuals, Abraham, rather than just saying, you know, I don't get it, but, you know, this guy's God, and, you know, and I'm a mere mortal, so you know, I'm going to keep my yap shut and see how this all turns out. That's not how this went down. Abraham felt comfortable enough to go to God and says, you know, God, I've got to tell you the truth. I don't get it. You're offering me this wonderful inheritance. You know, I'm about 90 years old, and I don't have a kid. No son, no daughter, no family. What good is an inheritance going to do me? I just don't understand. And so Abraham was approaching God from the mundane, from the just, this is my world. I don't understand anything beyond my world. I've never seen anything beyond my world. I've never been exposed to anything beyond my world. I don't really understand. It'd be like someone reading the Torah and saying, well, you know, it's a book of rules. God must be into rules. I ought to follow these rules. And if they do, they're going to take them nowhere. So God's response to Abraham is the same response that he has to us. He met with him through his word, and he says, I'm going to take you to heaven. I'm going to show you what I'm offering you. I'm going to take you to the place that I promised. And I'm going to show you the nature of the light that comprises stars, because it's that light that if you can relate to, if you can understand the nature of light, you're going to understand what I'm offering. I'm going to take you from the physical and the mundane and this realm of this material realm where everything decomposes, where the physical form is so limiting, stuck in time, degenerating, decomposing. And I'm going to show you the nature of light, and I'm going to explain it in heaven, in my home, where you're exposed to the nature of light. Now, we know with light, we instantly become perfect. We instantly become immortal. Time continues forever. Light is never destroyed. And with light, you can travel great distances in no time at all, giving you us the full reign of exploring the universe. And with light, there is enlightenment. And Abraham finally got it. He said, okay, now I'm in a position. Now you've shown me what you're really offering. This is not an inheritance that would be like a father here on earth giving a few shekels to his kids. No, what you're offering me is everything. This is your universe. You are an energy-based spirit. You're going to make me like you. And anyone who inherits what you're offering through this covenant, you're offering these same things. And so Abram said that he came as a result of that understanding to completely trust and rely upon Yahweh, which means he finally came to know him and understand what he's offering. And when Abraham trusted and relied on Yahweh, Yahweh says that based on that alone, on that understanding, on that decision, on that attitude of Abraham, that from that moment on, Yahweh looked at Abraham as being perfect, vindicated, righteous. Tzedak was the word in Hebrew. Extraordinarily powerful situation. So now you have Yahweh and Abraham about to celebrate this. And Abraham, you know, still very comfortable with God, asked the question. He says, okay, God, I get it now, but can you help me? I'd like an assurance. I'd like to have some verification. This is mind-blowing kind of stuff here. Can you offer me some verification as to how I would know for certain that this is all going to occur? How am I going to inherit all of this and my offspring, of which currently I have none, going to inherit all of this? And this is what God said. And this is not a particularly easy passage to translate. And unfortunately, we do not have an extant copy amongst the Qumran scrolls, so we're left with the Masoretic. But I'm going to share it with you the best that I'm capable of rendering it, and we're going to talk about it some. It appears to me, based upon what follows, that God was providing the symbolism that is valuable in giving us an understanding of the means that he's using for us to approach. And that all of this, you know, the big issue here, this transition in Abraham's thought, is the realization that the word of Yahweh, who had been approaching him, now reveals to him exactly what it was that he was offering and the means to understand the benefits of the covenant. And based upon that, Abraham came to trust and rely upon Yahweh. Now, it is important for Yahweh, for Abraham, and for us through him, to provide us with as many insights, as many clues, as many symbols as are absolutely possible to foreshadow how God is going to make that possible. Because after showing him light and the majesty of heaven, that the concept of being perfect and immortal, literally a child of God, so that you're royalty in the most magnificent sense, enriched and empowered beyond imagination. You know, can you imagine going and exploring all of the galaxies and all of the stars and all of the planets and all of the life forms and everything that is in the universe with its creator? That's what he had just come back for. And said, man, I really want to know for sure how all this is going to happen. And so God set up a feast. Now, before we consider what was going to be part of this, it is essential that you recognize that the word which defines the feasts that lead us from our troubled world to God's world appears in the midst of this. It's Kara. The seven invitations that God has provided for us to leave our world, our material world, and to camp out with him for all eternity is Mikra. In the plural, it's Mikre. It's based on the Hebrew verb kara. That's the verb we find in the midst of this. Kara means to invite. God is inviting us. It means to be called out. He's inviting us to be called out of this world. Kara means to meet. He's inviting us to meet with him after being called out of this world. Kara means to read and recite, which is the means that we use to explore the word so that we know we have the invitation and can read it and know when to meet, where to meet, and what is expected of us at these parties. And every one of these mikrei, based on the verb kara, is a festival feast, just as was this event that Yahweh was planning with Abraham. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Niyata. We're exploring what God said to Abraham after Abraham asked God, well, okay, God, that was spectacular. You know, you've shown me what you're really offering me. And I think God shows us this through his word just as much as he showed Abraham by actually taking him there. That's why the terms that are used in relation to Abraham's heavenly visit are written as, you know, I want you to convey this in writing, because we have that conveyance right now. It's called the Torah. That's how this has been conveyed to us in writing. So now God was asked to show, to demonstrate in a tangible way to Abraham how we can be assured that the very things that he is offering are going to be available to us. You know, now that he had seen eternity, he didn't want to come back to mortality, to tell you the truth. And so what God begins, and again, if you want to understand, there's one thing you can know. Knowing is good, but understanding is better. If you want to transition from knowing to understanding, we have to make connections. And sometimes the connections are the essence of the message. And that's why in this particular case, rather than just read through the dialogue, I'm trying to set the stage so that the connections are before us. In the midst of this, the operative verb is going to be kara. That is Abraham's response to all of this, is kara. But before kara, which is to invite, to read, to recite, to welcome, to call out and to be called out, we have another verb, and that verb is laka. Laka is going to be repeated twice. Now, laka can mean to grasp hold of. But It also means to select. It means to accept, to receive, and to obtain. And so it's going to be important here to denote who is offering what to whom. And as I read Lacan here, I sense that it is Yahweh that is offering these things to Abraham, and that he is encouraging Abraham to choose them, to accept them, to receive them. Because these things are all symbolic, in a way, of coming to know Yahweh, of coming to understand what he is offering, and to being able to see the process that is used for us to get from here to there, from the doorway that is Passover to the ultimate destination, which is camping out with God. So I see all of this as a means that God is using to communicate these things. These are themes that, of course, he will lay out and delineate in great detail over and over again. These same themes will appear again in the story of the Exodus, in the presentation of the Mikre in the midst of the Torah, in the life of Yahusha. And so I think it's God that's offering these things. But keep in mind, the biggest context here of all is that this is in the midst of a celebration. That it's through festival feasts that we come to know for certain that we are being given as the covenant's children everything that God has to offer. That the promises of the covenant are fulfilled through these festival feasts, because what he's throwing here now is a festival feast. All right, with that in mind, here's how it reads. And he, this is Yahweh, said to him, that would be Abraham, select and grasp hold of, laka, accept, receive, and obtain, to approach me, la, a mature young cow, an egla, as one of three things, and the wool of a goat, which is from Etz, speaks of strength and might, which comes from being properly fortified, becoming overwhelmingly powerful, as one of a series of three events which will occur in succession. And a male lamb, Ael, the leader and shepherd of the flock, the framework of the doorway, as the third of three things which will occur in succession. In addition, a dove, a tor, which serves not only as the basis of Torah, but also represents Yahweh's spirit, so as to fly away as a young bird, gozal, to be a nesting bird ready to be plucked out of the nest and taken away. We'll return to this statement, analyzing each of these concepts when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. So here we have Yahweh throwing a party, which is telling all of us, if you're paying attention, that it is through parties, through celebrations, through festival feasts, that we come to inherit everything that is God's to give us. Now, that is the single most profound aspect of all of this. So it's interesting that sometimes when we delve into the details, we find that which is the most profound. And sometimes it's when we have a perspective on things and view it from the proper perspective that we learn the most. And in this particular case, it's that long perspective that is the single most important aspect of this. Yahweh will delineate seven festival feasts that are designed to take us from being mortal, from being material, from being estranged, from being corrupt and flawed, from being relatively weak and mostly ignorant, unfortunately. He has a process of taking us so that we are enriched with his guidance and teaching, so that we are empowered by his spirit, so that we are perfected by his light, so that we are become thereby immortal, perfect, adopted into his covenant family, enriched and empowered. He has a means to do that. He only does it for his covenant children. That's why this is taking place in association with the covenant. That's why all of this is under the auspices of an inheritance for those who participate in the covenant. And that path to achieve these things is through seven festival feasts called the Mikra, based upon the verb kara. So here we are, and I'm going to share again the opening of this. I'm going to make it all the way through, and then we're going to go back and consider some of the details. But I don't want anyone to lose the big picture in the midst of these details, because it is the big picture that tells us this is how you know as a child of the covenant that you get to inherit everything that God has promised. And he, Yahweh, said to him, Abraham, select and grasp hold of, accept, receive, and obtain, to approach me, law, a mature young cow, as one of three things, and the wool of a goat, as one of a series of three events which will occur in succession, and a male lamb, as the third of the three things which will occur. In addition, a dove, so as to fly away as a young bird. And he, Abraham, accepted, received, and obtained for him to approach all of these things. And separating them into equal portions, he divided them accordingly in the middle, and he offered the individual the entire portion to approach, inviting his friends, associates, neighbors, and fellow countrymen. But the birds he did not divide or separate. Oh, my goodness. So you've got a series of three things, and then you've got some aspect of birds and flying and a nest and receiving and then doing some separating and some dividing and ultimately offering the individual, which would be Yahweh in this case, the entire portion, and then ultimately inviting everyone that he knew. He was so excited by what was being offered. And then not separating the birds. So, now let's look at the details. The first thing is that if we wish to participate in the covenant and to receive its benefits, we need to exercise our volition. God gave us free will. You know, he gave us three wonderful gifts. Life, although the life that he gave to each of us initially is mortal. It's limited in scope. He gave us free will. And he gave us a nesama, the unique thing that made Adam, the only thing that made Adam different than the other Homo sapiens on the planet. The nesama is different than the animal consciousness. He said that every animal got a nefesh, which is a soul, consciousness. Consciousness is what differentiates, according to Yahweh, animals from plants. Animals have consciousness, which means they're able to observe and respond to what they see, what they hear, what they observe. But the nesama that made Adam unique from other animals, and indeed from other Homo sapiens, is a conscience. It's the ability to differentiate that which is true from that which is false, that which is reliable from that which is not, that which is good from that which is bad. And so, with his, by observing what God was offering, by listening to what God had to say, and then by using free will to make a decision based upon what he had come to know and understand, using his conscience to determine what was the better choice, Abraham did what God is encouraging all of us to do. He made a choice. He chose to accept, to receive, and to obtain what God was offering as a means to approach him. Now, with that said, we have Al having called in from Tampa. We'll take Al's call and then return to this topic. Hello, Al. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Yada. How are you doing?
Good.
I appreciate all your work. I know you don't like any of that, but I really do. And I really appreciate that you read out the scriptures, and it's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask you about. I use a Logos and had to get the extra, the book, the scriptures, which I find pretty good. And but what can I mean, not endorsing whatever, but what type of paperback or whatever can I get that would be more accurate?
Okay. First, let me begin at the beginning. You said that, you know, you were thanking me, and I said, and you made the comment that I don't like that. And I just want to explain that people may have, in fact, I'm sure we have new listeners that say, why in the world is this guy bothered by being thanked? And you know the reason, but for our other listeners, I really have very little to do with this. I mean, I use the term, the name Yada, as opposed to my actual name, just to be as anonymous and as transparent as absolutely possible. What we're sharing here is, as Al, you mentioned, is Yah's testimony. It's God's offer. It's not my offer. All I'm doing is doing my best to explain what God's offering and to help people not only know what he actually said, but then understand it so that more of us are put in a position to capitalize upon it. It's the most fun job in the world, and it there is no sacrifice of any kind associated with it. And to credit me is like you know, if you listen to a speech of somebody from old, and it's like crediting the tape recorder, you know. So I don't play an important role in any of this.
I appreciate that, and I totally feel that. I spoke to you a while back about my father, and it's like, well, why is this, you know, what's this guy's name, and blah, 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 and they, you know, I don't feel an agenda at all from you, and you don't ask for anything, and I mean, it's just clean, you know, it just feels that way.
Yeah, and as you know, every one of the books that we are addressing, there's 15 of them. They come in different in groups. There's the groups, are, of course, of Yada Yah, which is yadayah.com, introtogod.org, and questioningpaul.com, as well as Prophet of Doom, Tea with Terrorists, and In the Company of Good and Evil. All of those are free. There's not a single thing that we sell. They're not in this to make a nickel. Everything is offered freely, and we don't even try to pressure anyone to accept Yahweh's instructions. I mean, we're going to lay them out and say, this is what God had to say. This is what he's offering. This is the best way to understand it, and this is how we have chosen to respond. This is how he has encouraged us to respond. And this is what he's offering, but the choice is each individual's alone. Now, that said, go ahead.
I'm learning, and I feel that I do get it, and I want to get more. I just feel that desire. And, speaking with my father, going through these things, he's the one I called about a while back with speaking in tongues, and of course I'm here in Tampa, and this is like the home of where Rodney Howard Brown is based out of. And we get some progress, and then he goes to Rodney Howard, and he comes back, and it's just not. And I'm frustrated to the point where when is the point where I give up? And
then
I'm going, I'm trying to spread the word within my family, and then go out from there.
Okay, now you've got three questions. Let me try to address them in order the best I can. The first of the questions is, you said that you have Logos, which is a marvelous tool. There's much of Logos. I have nothing to do with Logos. It is a separate company, and 99% of what comes with Logos I do not agree with. It's published. It's published by Christians, and 99% of the material that you get with it is counterproductive, actually worse than useless. The reason that I use it and talk about using it, encourage other people to buy it, is that if you just use the Hebrew tools in Logos, then you can be more efficient with your time, and I think even more effective at investigating what Yahweh has to say on your own. And that ultimately is what I encourage everybody to do. I don't want anybody dependent upon my translations. I want everyone to have the opportunity to have the tools to do exactly what I'm doing. And Logos just provides a marvelous tool in this regard, so long as you discount all the Christian stuff that hangs off the side. And what they provide is an electronic version of a number of different interlinears. You can pick whichever one you want. An interlinear just means that you've got the Hebrew and the English side by side. Then they will provide direct access to anywhere between 5 and 20 different lexicons and dictionaries. And so rather than having to have all those paper books, all of which I have sitting behind me as I do this program, rather than having to have them all open and you thumbing to the right place and looking up each word alphabetically, it will take you to the word in 15 different lexicons and dictionaries, which enable you to study the word and also to study the word in context with other words that share the same alphabetic letters. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us, Al. Come back to Shattering Myths. We're answering Al's question. Al called in from Tampa. And those who have listened to the program, Al, as you have over the years, know that I don't ever go directly to answering the question. I try to provide some background that leads to the answer, so that rather than just getting my opinion, which I think is useless, you actually get some background that helps people recognize the answer, and it becomes the answer as opposed to one person's opinion. So you started by asking the question, is there a scripture that you can buy that is better than what the one called the scriptures? And I began with Logos, and the reason I began with Logos is that it provides the tools that make it very efficient for you to do your own translations, including it has all the grammar references, and it provides the stems, the moods, and the conjunctions in Hebrew that are so essential to understanding what God is saying. You know, that it's a very important aspect of Hebrew. And so, when you use that, the first thing that you discover is that English translations are just awful. I mean, they're just absolutely terrible. And you lose about 90% of what God's trying to say because of the just very poor job that is done in religious publications. And every Bible is published by a religious organization. And so the answer is there are none, but I want you to recognize that your decision to buy and use Logos is the ultimate answer. Now, in the intro to God.org, in the opening volume of that called The Word, my goal is to equip everyone who reads that series of books to have the tools themselves. To be equipped with all the tools to be able to go on this voyage of discovery on their own using either Logos, or you can buy interlinears and dictionaries and hardback, or all of these things are available free online. It's just a little more cumbersome to use them online. So that's your first question. Tongues is the second. I'm sure I shared with you previously that when it's Shimon that is discussing what happened on Shavua in Acts. He says that the recipients of the empowerment of the Spirit, the enrichment of the Spirit on Shavua, which is the promise of Shavua, God enriches us with His Torah teaching, and He empowers us with His Spirit, that they were equipped to share Yahweh's message with individuals who came from, and it's this whole list of different countries. So the tongues that they spoke were the languages of men. They were empowered to communicate with people from Arabia, from Syria, from Lebanon, from Greece, from Rome. They spoke human languages for the express purpose of communicating Yahweh's testimony. And from that, that numbskulls that are religious get, well, that they must have been blabbering in a heavenly language. Well, the heavenly language, if you're speaking the language of heaven, you're speaking Hebrew. Hebrew is the language of heaven. And then there's another statement by Paul, which we'll completely discount since Paul, by his own admission, was demon-possessed. I really don't want the advice of Satan. And, you know, he was talking about the language of the angels. The fact is that the language spoken by Yahweh's messengers is also Hebrew. So the whole concept of speaking in tongues, I mean, think about how stupid that would be. God's going to say, you know, I'm going to inspire someone to blabber in a way that nobody has any clue what they're communicating. I'm going through all this trouble to communicate my testimony to you using words. And then what I want you to do is respond by blabbering. Nonsense. I mean, it's just the stupidity of religion. It's just amazing that people are succumbed to it. It's utterly thoughtless. The last question that you asked, Al, I want to address, which is, when do I give up? When do I approach? When do I give up? And the answer to that question is not pleasing to most. But if you look at Yahusha, Yahusha answered the questions of those who approached him. And those who were antagonistic towards him, he exposed and condemned. He gave them both barrels. And so the fact of the matter is, unless someone is open-minded and receptive, unless they genuinely want to know Yahweh, you aren't going to prevail with them. And if they're religious, they're going to put up so much armor and so much shields that evidence and reason will not prevail. Thanks for the call, Al.